Welcome back to Women's Focus. We're now ready to meet our next guest. She's none other than Colonel Gail E. Crawford. She is with the Judge Advocate Program for the Air Force Nuclear Weapons Center at Kirtland Air Force Base. Good afternoon, Colonel Crawford, and welcome to Women's Focus.
Good afternoon, Pamela. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And, you know, it's not often that we get to meet a colonel, an African-American woman who has reached the level of colonel. And you have such an amazing story that we want to share with our audience today. So just sort of tell us, Colonel Crawford, how did you get interested in being in the military?
Wow, so that's an interesting story. I will say this. I have three siblings, and all four of us have served our nation in the military. My older brother, Daryl, served in the Army. My older sister, Sonia, served in the Navy. I am the only Air Force in the family, and my younger brother, John, served in the Navy. I'm the only one who's still in. But it was my older brother initially, the fact that he had the courage to get on that plane and go to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and do something different. That helped me see possibility, that I didn't have to stay where we were and do what everybody else did. I could branch out and do something different. But I took a little bit of a detour before going into the military. I had a basketball scholarship to play for Albany State in Georgia. I went there. I played basketball. I liked sports. I liked basketball. I did not like being a student and playing basketball. I stuck it out, finished my semester, was thinking about what I was going to do next. A friend of mine, Angelo Cogdale, I'll never forget him, told me about these amazing benefits that the Air Force had. You could finish school, the Air Force would pay, and you could travel and see the world. Well, that sounded like an amazing opportunity. So there I packed up my things, went home from Albany, Georgia, back to Florida, and announced to my parents that I was quitting school and joining the Air Force.
Now, what did your parents say when you told them that?
Well, I'll tell you, my mom initially, she cried. You know, she was, moms are concerned about, their children and their future. My dad was excited that I was going to go and do something so adventurous. And so he was excited for me, but my mom was really afraid. I think it turned out all right, though.
Do you think your mom or your dad was expecting you to play professional basketball in the women's league?
Well, here's what I will tell you about my parents. I think they always knew that I would be a lawyer. Although when I was a child, I really wanted to be a doctor. I think in my heart, I wanted to do something that helped people. And all that biology kind of scared me away from medical school. And eventually, I think the universe is lawful, right? You end up where you're supposed to be. And so I landed in law school. A circuitous route, and we'll talk about that, I guess, in a second. But my parents really thought I was going to go to medical school. And so when I said I was quitting college to join the Air Force, I think they probably were a little bit concerned that I was, off my path. But I think I found my way back.
So you left college and you went to the Air Force. Now, how long were you in the Air Force before you went back to school?
Interestingly, I joined the Air Force, went to basic training, and my first assignment as a teenager was here in the land of enchantment. I landed here in Albuquerque, New Mexico in the very late 80s. I won't say how late because I'll always be 29. And being from Florida, I may as well have landed on the other side of the moon, Pamela, because I had never seen high desert or mountains or anything like that. But it was an amazing experience for me as a teenager to come to Albuquerque, New Mexico and start my career as an airman basic in the Air Force. I think I was here for about 5 or 6 years. So really some formative years of my life were spent here in Albuquerque. And I was truly blessed with some amazing mentors who encouraged me. They saw potential in me and they encouraged me to do more. One supervisor in particular, his name is Wayne Bittner. He is still here. I ran into him, ironically, just a few months ago. Encouraged me to pursue being a paralegal because he thought, there was more that I could do with my talents and my abilities. And so I did that. And I wound up doing what we call retraining. You leave your old job, you go to school, and then you train and then you go to your new job. And my new job was to be a paralegal. And then as a paralegal, there were so many amazing people, attorneys who I worked for, who would say to me, "What are you doing working as a paralegal? You should be a lawyer." And I thought, maybe I should. And so I looked into different programs that would, you know, help me sort of finish my undergrad and then go to law school. And it was a pretty tall order to go from essentially 1 year of college to how am I going to be a lawyer. And like I said, I had some really amazing mentors along the way, found some programs, one in particular that would allow me to leave active duty and go back to school. And that's when I ended up at Florida State University in Florida.
Now, that is quite a story. So you left college. You went into the military as a basic.
Mm-hmm, Airman basic.
Oh, my gosh. And so that means that you were not a commissioned officer.
No, ma'am. I went from E1 to now O6.
O6. And
right.
So then you went back for retraining. So you went to your paralegal school.
I went to my paralegal school, became a paralegal, worked in that career field for a few years, and then left active duty and went to school at Florida State. Now, I stayed in the reserves because I wanted to continue to serve, and there were benefits that were available to me if I was still a reservist, like the GI Bill. And so I stayed in the reserves, and so I went and did my reserve duty, like, you know, on weekends, between semesters and that type of thing. And so I continued to serve as a paralegal, a tech sergeant at the time, a technical sergeant, E6, while I was in law school. And then when I graduated from law school, that's when I got commissioned and came back into the Air Force as a lieutenant.
As a lieutenant. Oh, my gosh. So that must have been quite a change. Were there people that you had met when you entered as basic training, and now you're seeing them as a lieutenant colonel? And then how was that relationship?
Well, it was pretty amazing. People would recognize my face, but the rank was wrong. And that's actually happened here, too, at Kirtland, because even though it was so long ago, there were so many people here now, civilians mostly, who were here when I was an airman and whom I've reconnected with, which is just truly amazing. But, yeah, there were people who I worked with as a paralegal that, you know, now I work with now as a colonel, as an attorney. In fact, there was one gentleman, he was my boss. And then fast forward 7 years, I ended up being his boss.
See, that just tells you people should always be nice to other people.
Be kind to your underlings. They may be your boss one day. Yes, that's true. That's true.
That's pretty amazing. So let's talk about now you're in the JAG Corps,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of assignments were you doing?
So initially, I started out in the base legal office at Patrick Air Force Base in Florida, and I was a prosecutor. As most of us start out on that side, you start out prosecuting, you hone your skills, you learn about the law, about military law, and if you're good, you may get the opportunity to be a defense counsel. And I was lucky enough to be one of those people that got to defend airmen in court. So I spent a couple of years as a defense counsel as well, and then did some interesting, what we would call career broadening jobs, where I got to learn about things other than law. But my career field is law, and so that's where I would always come back to. But yes, I've been a prosecutor, I've been a defense attorney, I've done criminal litigation, I've done civil litigation, and in the civil litigation, I on the Air Force side, defending the Air Force in civil lawsuits, which was really, truly an amazing job, mostly focusing, for my part, on labor and employment law. So a lot of EEO litigation and that type of stuff, which was a lot of fun. But unfortunately, or fortunately, the goal of the JAG Corps and the Air Force is to grow leaders. And so you don't necessarily get to camp out in the place where you're comfortable. You know, once you hone your skills, you get good at it, it's time to move on and do something else. And so I've really done a lot of things in about 18 years as a JAG.
And so now, in the position that you hold as colonel,
mm-hmm,
so how many people are under you now?
Well, it's very interesting. We recently went through a base realignment where our mission changed just a couple of months ago. But prior to that, I was the senior JAG on the installation, where we had an office of about 26 people, mostly lawyers, some paralegals, and we're responsible for legal work throughout the installation, all of it. We had environmental lawyers, we've got contract or government procurement lawyers, we've got folks who do general law, like legal assistance to help our airmen. We have criminal prosecutors, and so just sort of runs the gamut, what you would think of like a city attorney, but for the installation. Now, recently, we went through a realignment, and the Nuclear Weapons Center sort of broke off from the base, and now we are a tenant organization. And so now my job is to focus my responsibilities on advising our commander, Major General Jensen, on the acquisition and sustainment of nuclear weapons for the nuclear enterprise.
So you advise him on weapons that should be purchased? How does that work?
No, it's really acquisition and sustainment. And so it's the procurement of weapon systems, that kind of thing. But he's also a commander. Most importantly, he's a commander. And so his job is to organize, train, and equip the airmen under his charge so that we carry out the mission, and in this case, nuclear weapons mission.
Now, that's quite an impressive story. So tell me what happens. You walk into the room. Here's this African-American woman. She's a colonel, and she's advising this officer on nuclear weapons. So how are you received? And then what kind of barriers did you ever face?
Well, you know, with regard to the barriers, I will say this. When I was in Washington, D.C., and you saw my bio, I've spent quite a bit of time in Washington, D.C. There was a lady I met. She was a two-star general at the time, African-American. And I had never seen an African-American general officer, especially not a female. And so I made my way to her through crowds of people. I really wanted to get and talk to her. And I'm telling this story because what she said to me, I will never forget. Because I asked her the question that you just asked me. What barriers did you face in getting to be a general? Did you have race problems? Did you have gender problems? And what she said to me very clearly was, I've never had a problem. I've worked with some people who might have had problems with race and gender, but I don't have any problems with it. And so that was so inspirational to me because it taught me that whatever is going on out there, you do what you're supposed to do, because if those people have a problem, that's their problem. And so I will say that I've been fortunate that I've never had a problem, but that's kind of tongue in cheek because you and I know that there are barriers. But I think that barriers are like obstacles. And if you look at them, your eyes aren't on your goal.
I don't know if you know this, Colonel Crawford, but I, too, am a lawyer. And when I first started practicing law and I walked into the courtroom, the opposing counsel would say, if we have never met before, and sometimes that did happen, they would say, did you graduate from law school? You know, sort of things like that. So did you ever face questions like that? And I sort of looked at them and I would say, well, we'll see.
About that. That's right. Well, of course. I mean, getting to the rank of colonel, even as a JAG, there are certain jobs that you would get along the way that are like markers. They're markers. And so people start to pay attention when you get certain assignments, right? Because they know that based on that job, you're probably headed to a higher rank. And so absolutely, I've had some interesting looks. I've had folks, when I was the executive assistant to a general a few years ago, I talked to people on the phone and, yeah, hey, come on by and bring that package. And then they walk in and ask me, where is the general's executive assistant? And I'd say, well, you're looking at her. Which, you know, it's always interesting to see the wheels turn and sort of like the bias fall away because they realize that they had assumed that I might look a certain way. And surprise, surprise, you know, here I am. And so, yes, that happens a lot. I have had some challenges, but I've always had really good bosses. And I will tell you this about the military. The good thing that I will say about the Air Force. Now, I can't necessarily speak for the other services, but I suspect it's the same. There is absolutely no tolerance for any type of discrimination based on your race, your gender, your religion. I mean, it's a really, really, really strong organization that acts swiftly and appropriately to any type of hint that there is an issue. Now, we're people, right? And so that's not to say that I have not encountered folks who needed mentoring on the issue, but I am also very lucky that there have been some trailblazers who've made a path for me. And so maybe some of the obstacles were already knocked down when I got there. But I tend to find them as well. So I don't want to make it sound like that there were no issues. I'm sure there were. My choice was not to focus on them.
That is great advice. And so I'm glad you shared that with us. Now, let me ask you, Art, do you have, normally you would never ask this in an interview or anything, but do you have a family? As a colonel, do you have time to have a family?
Pamela, I am so glad you asked that question, and here's why. Recently, my husband and I were given the amazing opportunity to have a family. Three little children from Columbus, Georgia, just came into our lives in December. Their names are Camila, Ja'Cory, and Carmen. They're 4, 5, and 7, and they are the most beautiful thing that has ever happened in my life. So things changed once we became parents, so we went from 0 to 3. And it's just been truly amazing. I have an amazing partner who really, really believes that parenting takes two. And so it touches my heart when I wake up in the mornings and there is my husband making oatmeal for the children. So yes, I do have a family, a new family, and it's been the most amazing thing I've ever done.
So now, what does your husband do in the military? And is there a difference in the rank? And if so, how has that affected the relationship?
I knew you would ask me that. So, yes, my husband, by trade, is a biologist. He studied biology at the Air Force Academy. He came into the Air Force and became a maintainer, aircraft maintenance. How does that work, right? So he's done that. He's done nuclear weapons. He's done a lot of things. Right now, he works at plans and programs for the base. And yes, there is a rank difference. I do outrank my husband. Recently, I was promoted to colonel just last year, so it's only been about 6 or 7 months. And so my husband is a lieutenant colonel.
And so this is interesting because we always have these conversations about women having these great jobs, and maybe they could be jobs that are higher than those that their husband holds. Has that been an issue in terms of conversations about responsibilities at home? I mean, I think our listening audience would like to know that.
Well, you know, to everybody else, I'm Colonel Crawford, but to my husband, I'm Gail or Honey. And so I don't really believe that it has made a difference in our family. There are jokes. You know, my husband teased me that once I made colonel, I had to buy him a car, which obviously I did not do. But yes, it's so we've been a military couple for a while. And so we were mostly the same rank until I got promoted. And if you're out there listening, honey, I hope you don't have a problem with it. It seems that it's just one of those things. I think I picked the right person who really doesn't care. I don't think he cares that I outrank him.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. But who knows? Maybe he does.
We'll find out because he might call into the station.
He might call in and we'll find out.
So what's next for Colonel Crawford? Where is she going next in her career?
Gosh, that's so hard to say. Probably I'll be moving this summer. That would be my guess. And it's just hard to know where. Our assignments are handled by folks at the Pentagon. And so they call and they talk to you about options and then they make a decision. And usually it works out if you're married to another military member. They try to keep us together. And we've been so lucky that they've done really a good job of keeping us assigned in the same place so that, you know, so that the family is strong.
So what do the kids think about having a mom who's a colonel, a dad who's a lieutenant colonel? So what do they say in the morning? Do they get up and salute you?
They don't. But I will tell you this. There's order in my house, as you might imagine. I think in the beginning there was a lot of chaos. But now we have instilled what the military would call good order and discipline. And so things run fairly smoothly. I mean, they're small children, and so we allow them to be children. But I think that they were surprised at the level of structure that they stepped into.
Well, good for them. I think the structure will be really, really great.
I certainly hope so.
So how many African-American female colonels do you think there are in the military today?
Oh, gosh. I don't have access to that data, but if I had to hazard a guess, I would say it's probably less than 1% of the military. And that's probably generous. I know that I am the only active duty JAG female colonel. fingers crossed, there are some coming up. But I would say that's a very small number of people.
So I can say we're truly honored. Right here in New Mexico, we have the only female JAG colonel living right in our state.
Only African-American female colonel. We have a few female colonels, but I am the only African-American.
Wow. And as we celebrate Black History Month, we are really proud of you and what you're doing and the position that you're holding.
Thank you so much, Pamela.
And if you have any words of wisdom that you could share with girls who might be listening to you right now, what would those words of wisdom be?
I think I would always start with possibility. I think it's so important that young people see possibility. And I think it's important that parents make sure that their children are exposed to successful African Americans, people who have made it to pretty high places in life, so that the children see that that's possible. I know that it's not to say that they don't see possibility when they see a white person who is a lawyer or a doctor or the president, but I think it becomes more real for them when they see somebody who looks like them who has done it. And so my first piece of advice for parents is to make sure that your children see possibility. Now, for young people, I will say this: you can do anything. Nothing stops you. If you're stuck, you just think that you're stuck. All it takes is to take that first step, and miraculously, the universe opens up. Somebody appears in your life to help you make that next step. That's certainly been my story. Mine is a story of amazing mentors, people who saw things in me that I didn't see in myself, who reached out to me and said, "Hey, what do you think about being a paralegal? Or maybe you should be a lawyer. Or we think you should head up this division." You know, and I think that's it's really about possibility, it's about opportunity, and it's about helping people see potential in themselves.
Well, those are some great words of wisdom, and I want to thank you so much for sharing them with us today on Women's Focus. Thank you for joining us here in the station, but most of all, thank you for being a part of New Mexico.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Pamela. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. We'll be back in just a moment with our next guest right here on Women's Focus.